And we welcome you in to the Gridiron Wrap. I'm Blake Matrzak. You've probably heard me on the Mitch Albom Show and Sports Wrap. I'm sitting in tonight with Bill Keenis, Detroit Lions historian. Dude knows everything there is to know about football. And Bill, when we talked earlier, I said we got to start right where we should.
Absolutely.
The Detroit Lions.
It was maybe a little appropriate to start with Silent Night. I think that was the background music there, because tonight is a lot more silent than last night was at Ford Field. And as the fans at this time, 24 hours ago, were getting revved up and ready to rock and roll. And that's what happened. And, you know, as I was watching the game and see how it unfolded, the thing that hit me, and we've talked about it so many times, Blake, is the Lions finally had their offensive line together. And no unit, in my opinion, is more critical to a team's success than the O-line. And you saw that last night. I mean, the running game, the passing game, Goff had time to throw 5 touchdown passes. It sets up, you know, good field position for special teams even. I mean, there's so many variables when you have an O-line that can do what the Lions did last night. And you know, it really bodes well. Like we've always said, you got to be ascending up the mountain. And after that win last night, no one's going to argue that the Lions didn't take a step forward and upward with that win over Denver.
That game to me felt a lot like Jared Goff saying to all of his haters, watch me. I can do this too. I know I've had a couple rough games, but you could argue that that was, if not his best game as a pro, his second best game as a pro, and definitely his best game as a Detroit Lion. Like, he showed up. The balance was there with the run game and the passing game. We saw Jameson Williams have the most targets he's had this season. It was a real complete offensive game for the Lions.
Yeah, it really was. And speaking of Jared, I remember a game when he was with the Rams against Kansas City. It was something like 51-48, or it was just one of those all-time shootouts where it was going to be the last team with the ball was going to win. And I think that's exactly what happened.
That one was in Mexico City. I remember that game vividly.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. The other thing I believe that last night showed, and today also is showing to some extent, is the importance of home field advantage. I mean, the Lions fans have always been a factor. You know, this year especially, and last night in particularly. And then you look at what Buffalo's doing to Dallas today. In Buffalo, in clement weather, the fans are, you know, at full throat, as they say. And home field advantage is real, and it's more of a factor in the NFL, I believe, than any other sport, any other professional sport. And where the Lions, what can happen in the next 3 weeks, who knows, with respect to the seeding. If you can get a couple home games, look out. Anything can happen. It's not an absolute necessity, because there have been teams. The Packers did it in, 10. I think it was in the 2010 season when they beat Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl. The Giants have done it. The Steelers did it when they played at Ford Field. Teams can get to the playoffs by playing all road games, or get to the Super Bowl by playing all road games.
I think the Bengals did that as well a couple of years
ago. Yeah. They were 9-7. Yeah. They finished 9-7. So, but it does underscore the value of home field. And, you know, I've talked to a number of people who were just like, you know, deaf and mute by the time the game was over from screaming and you know, getting bombarded by sound from last night's game from the crowd.
I mean, last night was not even just with the Lions. It was just a great night for the city of Detroit. We saw Michigan State downtown playing a basketball game. They beat Baylor. I got to take in Frozen last night at the Opera House, and then the Lions close it out with it. It was a great night for the city of Detroit. All these different events going on, and like you were saying, it all culminated with an amazing atmosphere at Ford Field. But
it did. And you mentioned the Michigan State game. That was awesome to see Tom Izzo and his Spartans do what they did against Baylor. I mean,
yeah,
top six team in the country. And it just speaks to the reality of sports. And
I wonder how many people double dipped, like went to the Michigan State game and then went right over to Ford Field.
There had to be a few. I would think, you know, the Spartan fans that came from the East Lansing area, you know, they're already in the city. And if they could get tickets, that's the X factor nowadays is just being able to get tickets. You know, they probably did. But you know, you're right. And the, you know, the exposure, the visibility of the city on NFL Network to the whole country last night. And, of course, Michigan State Baylor game to the whole country as well. Gus Johnson, our guy Gus, did that game. And at the end of the broadcast, from the greatest city in America, Detroit, Michigan. You know, don't we love Gus Johnson? He's a Detroiter, and he's proud of it.
Yeah.
You're right. What a great day for the city and for the fans and the people. And, you know, sports is such a great, you know, community galvanizer 100%. At every level. And that's, you just love it. You love it.
So the Lions now over the last 2 years have 19 wins. Mm-hmm. That ties the most over a 2-season span. So and I've heard you talk about it with other people. This is the start of the run,
mm-hmm.
right? Like we're starting to see the start of the window, but I mean, they can break that record. Obviously mm-hmm. they have, you know, mm-hmm. more chances with the rest of the regular season, mm-hmm. but we also have to look and say, this is the first time they've had a double digit win season since 2016. They can lock up the division next week for the first time since 1993. Mm-hmm. Like this is a very fun season, and we're seeing all these draft picks and everything that's kind of been happening over the last year built up into this year.
Yeah, and it is historical, or can be, from a number of wins standpoint. I think the last double-digit win we had one in 14. We had 11. That was the second most wins in franchise history for the regular season. But here's the deal. The one thing I came to learn and still believe after all my years with the Lions and Washington initially in my career and even now with the NFL in a different way, but it's really not about a win or a number of wins. It's about the win.
Mm-hmm.
The win, meaning the last game of the season. So yeah. You strive toward that. Like you said, Blake, the team is young. It's so well positioned for the future. But you got to take advantage of that. You can't, you know, assume anything. I mean, the whole NFL football world in 2000, or excuse me, after the 91 season, felt that it was going to be the Lions and the Cowboys mm-hmm. for the next decade. Well, we were hit and miss, up and down, like a roller coaster often. You know, we had the great year in 91. We finished in last place in 92, you know, made the playoffs 93, 94, 95, last place in 96, made the playoffs in 97. So it was really up and down, where Dallas pretty much maintained a high level of excellence back then. But the key for this year's Lions team and for the future, and I think they have a handle on that. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Brad Holmes has a real handle on it's long term. He has to look at it that way.
Yeah.
You want to win now, but you also want to not sacrifice tomorrow.
Yeah, 100%. So we are going to hit a quick break here. We are going to hit the games around the NFL in the next segment, and then later in the show we'll come back, talk more Lions and how exciting and historical the season is. More on that. And I think towards the end of the show, Bill, we've been talking about this off air a lot, the transfer portal, mm-hmm. state of college football, everything that's going on. We saw Chip Kelly go on a nice rant the other day about how everything is in the NCAA, and I would love to get your thoughts on the whole transfer portal, because I have strong thoughts on it too.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that later in the show. But like we said, the number one story of the day is the Detroit Lions winning last night against the Denver Broncos. So you are listening to Gridiron Rap right here on 760 WJR. Bill, I don't know how long it's going to take for me to get used to hearing my name by the Mr. Big Voice there. But we're back on the Gridiron Rap. Bill, why don't we take a little tour around the NFL real quick for everyone out there that hasn't been able to catch all the games. I think we start right in the division with the Lions. That Browns-Bears game was insane. And, I mean, the Bears were up in the fourth quarter, had a chance to really – lock down that game. We saw Justin Fields slide early on a fourth down, and they still had a chance to win it.
And, well, they literally had the ball in their lap on that Hail Mary. It was an eerie reminder. I don't know if you recall it. You've probably seen the highlight, but when the Colts with Jim Harbaugh as quarterback went to Pittsburgh in 95 for the AFC Championship game, and Harbaugh led him to a Hail Mary opportunity at the end of the game. It was a perfect pass, real high. It just fell out of the sky in the end zone and bounced around, and it looked like one of the Colts receivers had it, just like today in Cleveland, where the Bears receiver Moody had the ball just fall right into his lap, and it inexplicably almost bounced out and preserved a victory for the Browns. But again, that comeback, I think, speaks to what we talked in the first segment about the home field advantage, because the Cleveland fans, the crowd is always crazy in Cleveland, and it certainly was this afternoon, and undoubtedly helped the Browns with Joe Flacco again as quarterback. Are you kidding me? Over 300 yards passing.
And he had a couple picks, and he didn't have a perfect game. But with the Joe Flacco experience is always one of three things, and I've said this before. It's either going to be a deep completion, a deep interception, or a deep pass interference. That's it. That's what he does. But when he throws the ball, man, it still looks good. I don't understand how the Jets didn't get him with all the Zach Wilson stuff, but that's a story for another day.
That is interesting. The other game that probably surprised some fans, but I think people that follow the game and understand the game weren't as surprised, and that was the Bills' domination over Dallas. I think Dallas was due for a letdown of sorts, because they've been riding so high. But again, it was on the road in Buffalo, which is one of the hardest places in the country to play. And you don't see many, that's probably the one stadium you don't see many Cowboy fans. It's all Bills Mafia, as they say. And it was a weather game. You know, there were weather issues. And as I was watching it, I remember one series where Buffalo ran the ball, I think 10 or 11 straight times. And for the game, when did you think you'd have a Josh Allen game where he only threw, unless my stats are wrong, seven passes?
Seven for 15 for 94 yards.
Yes, he only completed seven passes. They ran 49 times. So they knew what it was going to take to win that, or they believed that's what it was going to take to win the game. So they rushed three times as much as they passed.
But with the Bills, it's always the same story too. As long as they're not turning the ball over, Josh Allen will keep them in the game, whether it's running or passing. Like that's how he is. And Dallas struggles if they don't force turnovers. They seem to struggle. And I mean, turnovers obviously have a lot to play in any game, but I mean, James Cook going for 179 too.
Yeah.
I mean, that.
Well, it sort of reminded me, and this is going way back, and I don't know why it reminded me of this, but maybe it was Buffalo's redemption of sorts, even though it's just a regular season game. But the Super Bowl in Tampa, Super Bowl 25. It was in January of 91, the Whitney Houston Anthem Super Bowl, when the Bills were, it was their first Super Bowl, and they were heavily favored against the Giants. And what did Bill Parcells and Bill Belichick and the Giants coaching staff come up with? A ball control approach to milk the clock, keep the Kelly gun offense off the field. And OJ Anderson, of all people, you know, was the MVP. You know, he ran for 130, 140 yards. And I think the time of possession in that game, I think the Giants had it for a little over 40 minutes and Buffalo had it for 19 something. So, you know, if you can run the ball, and what does that speak to? The offensive line, you can win anywhere at any time. And, you know, Buffalo proved that today, and the Lions proved that last night. And what is it with the other thing it does? And you mentioned how good Jared Goff played. There are a few quarterbacks in the league, if any, as good at play action as Jared Goff. I mean, when you're running the ball, his play action just works.
Yeah.
And it certainly did last night.
So to stick in the Lions division, the Packers lost to the Bucs, and Baker Mayfield had a day. He had 380 and four touchdowns. Jordan Love had a good game too. He threw for 284 and two touchdowns. But it goes back to what you were just talking about. Green Bay only had 60 yards on 17 carries. Meanwhile, the Bucs had 27 carries for 99 yards. And those 40 yards can make a huge difference. Field position, everything like that. Tampa is such a weird team. They're so up and down, but that division's wide open. And I think I think it's going to come down to them and the Falcons. And if you're telling me I have to pick between Baker Mayfield and Desmond Ridder, I will take Baker every time.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, it is a strange division. And you go back a few years when Seattle, in a similar type division race, they were
7-9, I believe.
7-9. They were under 500.
Yep.
But they made the playoffs and they beat New Orleans in the first round because they were the division champs.
Yep.
New Orleans won 11 games that year, as I recall.
That was the Beastquake game.
That
when
was
Marshawn Lynch.
Exactly. Yeah. And so what does that speak to? We're getting repetitive here. Home field advantage. And yeah, so you never know. The key is to get in. That's the most important thing for the Lions. And as you mentioned off air, if the Rams had lost today to the Commanders, the Lions could have clinched, but we'll have to wait potentially until tomorrow, right?
Yeah. So if
we'll see
it, and we had talked about this off air too, it's such a weird spot because you obviously want the Lions to clinch a playoff spot, but winning the division, I think, is the highest priority. You win next week, you take care of that. But now you're with Dallas losing, you're kind of in a fight again for that one seed, you know? Obviously, we see San Fran winning and dominating the way they are, but you're not out of that, the race for that one seed. Now with only one NFC team getting the bye, like, that's huge. And so you want to lock up the playoffs, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if Seattle pulled off the upset and beat the Eagles.
No, it's and to that point, the Lions just need to take care of their own business. You know, win next week, go down and they played well in Dallas. You know, it's out of the weather, which has been a topic of discussion for Jared Goff throughout this season. He's better indoors, and the last three games are indoors essentially. So that it could be a lot worse in that regard. You're not going to Green Bay. You're not going to Chicago again. You're going to Dallas in a couple of weeks. But the key is going to be going up to Minnesota and winning. And the Vikings, they played better than I thought they would against Cincinnati. In Cincinnati, they could have, should have, would have won that game. So it's not going to be easy. The Vikings are definitely playing better, and the quarterback played pretty well at Cincinnati as well, yeah. Mullins. So
Jake Browning too, from that game, just real quick, he has gotten himself a backup job for the next like 8 years. That guy, he's played well. He's come in for Joe Burrow, and he's gotten himself a nice little payday for the next few years. There was one other thing I wanted to ask you about with other games around the league. Did you catch any of the end of the Chiefs-Patriots game?
I did not. No, I was
There was a point where the Patriots went for it on fourth down on their own 10-yard line.
Mm-hmm.
They were just like, you know what? We're just going to go for it. And it was right at the end of the game, and the Chiefs ended up just kneeling it out. They had the ball at their 10-yard line. They could have gone and scored. Probably would have covered a spread. There were some people probably not too happy about that. But they kneeled it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Mahomes had another 300-yard passing game, but he had two interceptions. They again couldn't run the ball great. That team, but we talked about the other day when you were in here doing sports wrap, none of us would be surprised if they go on a run because it's Patrick Mahomes.
No,
I'll never count him out.
No, they have been up and down this year without question. And I know New England made it a game for at least a half or three quarters. Mm-hmm. They played them pretty tight. So as far as what the Patriots did at the end, you know, you've got an unsettled quarterback situation in New England, and maybe Bill O'Brien and Bill Belichick just wanted to see, you know, you are putting stuff on tape as a player, and it doesn't matter if it's the first play of the game or the last play of the game. You put something on tape that's going to catch a coach's eye either on your current team or potentially throughout the league. And so maybe the coaches, you know, they just wanted to give their offense a chance to prove itself in that type of situation. You just never know. But Kansas City is a bit of a mystery. But as is the AFC, it's hard to put your finger on where that's going to end up. Baltimore still, you know, with the number one seed, I believe, still is probably a favorite, but you know, they've had some clunkers this year too, so who knows.
We'll find out, I think, a lot about that team tonight.
Yeah,
going against,
I agree,
Jacksonville's been weird too, but Jacksonville at home, I think we'll find out a lot about the Ravens. But you just touched on something with the coaching and Bill Belichick that I would love to come back and talk about, because I think that there's a couple coaches that have been mainstays in the NFL that we might not be so sure about next year. Mm-hmm. So let's come back. Let's talk about that and touch on any other games that you want to touch on around the NFL. So you are listening to Gridiron Rap here on 760 WJR. All right, Bill, going into the break, you brought up something that just kind of made my brain have a brain blast of an idea. And we're kind of in that season where coaches are, well, we saw it with the Chargers. They fired their coach this week. But talking about guys that have been in the NFL, especially like mainstays, with the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin, there's rumors that they might be ready to move on from him. And obviously we saw earlier in the week that there's rumors that this is Bill Belichick's last season. What do you kind of think about all that, those guys that have been around forever, and, you know, from your perspective, being around coaches with the Lions or other organizations that those rumors were floating around, how do coaches deal with those rumors?
Well, I think coaches are so singularly focused. They're not worried about anything but what's right in front of them. And I've seen that. They have to be that way. The competitive juices only allow them to go in that direction. But the coaches also know the business. They understand mm-hmm. it. I mean, you know, the guy that's considered the, you know, the godfather of American football and coaching, Paul Brown was fired. And then you look at some of the coaches that have won Super Bowls. Tom Coughlin was started in Jacksonville, didn't win. Pete Carroll was in New England and gets to Seattle and wins a Super Bowl. Dick Vermeil took the Eagles to a Super Bowl, but you know, it was probably a mutual parting there. Goes to St. Louis and wins a Super Bowl. Tony Dungy couldn't get it done in Tampa, goes to Indy and gets it done. Dan Reeves took Denver to some Super Bowls and then, you know, didn't work there. He went to Atlanta, took Atlanta to a Super Bowl. Tom Landry, you know, one of the greatest coaches of the 60s into the 70s and the 80s, got fired by the Cowboys. So it's not surprising. Mm-hmm. It's a unique industry and era. And it's sadly, unfortunately, just what happens in the business. But I think coaches in their DNA, they're so focused, they're so just straight ahead that it doesn't faze them. I mean, the hard part really in some respects is when the rumors start, and there's more just with the reality of social media today. You can't escape it when you're talking about family members, kids, you know, assistant coaches. So that's the hard part to deal with. And I know that impacts, you know, the family members of coaches and assistant coaches.
It's so odd it being two teams though, like the Steelers and the Patriots. I mean, obviously we've seen the Patriots go on this incredible run really over the last 20 years, where if you told me 3 years ago, like Bill Belichick it would be his choice if he left ever. And the Steelers, we never see. I mean, what have they had, like three coaches in the last 50 years? So it's just so odd that those are two teams that are really reeling. And I mean, obviously the Steelers are still kind of in the hunt there for the playoffs, but that game yesterday didn't help them at all.
No.
But I mean, those are two guys that I think that if they were let go, they would, I mean, obviously Belichick would have a job right away. And I think Tomlin as well. Like, those are guys that are staples in the NFL, you know?
Yeah, I think part of it, and this is probably at most levels and in most sports, at some point, unless you're having ultra success, the players just need to hear a different voice. Mm-hmm. It sounds simple, but it is. And I do believe that what's happened in Pittsburgh since they hired Chuck Noll in 1969. Now, it wasn't that case before that. They went through a lot of coaches in Pittsburgh. And the same with New England before Belichick went there. But, you know, what they've done is pretty remarkable. In the case of Mike Tomlin, the issue is they haven't had a playoff win for like 7 or 8 years, which is unprecedented in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
With the, you know, the expectation that the Steelers have, it's over the chart, over the top, you know, expectations. So I think, and if you listen to Pittsburgh talk radio, sports radio, I mean, it's crazy, you know, how upset the fans are because they've had such a high standard and their expectations are so high and they have been spoiled. And I'm sure it's the same in New England. I'm sure that, you know, the fans have been so spoiled. The X factor that's real interesting for both teams, speaking to what you said about them both being attractive coaching candidates, especially in a year like this one appears like it's going to be with so many vacancies, the teams can trade them. They're both under contract. And we've seen that before. You know, coaches have been traded. I mean, Belichick was traded, I think, from the Jets to New England, technically.
I believe you're right. Yeah.
Yeah. And John Gruden was traded from the Raiders to Tampa. So it's not unprecedented. So if ownership and wants to do that, depending on the contract that the coaches have, because, you know, logic, if you're trading a coach, you're trading a contract as well.
Yeah.
It's like a player. So I think both if they were on the open market, Belichick and Tomlin, could command a much higher dollar than the one they're making right now. But it really remains to be seen. It's so hard to call that. It really is. But again, I tend to look at the duration and how long they've been there as an even more
Yeah,
remarkable accomplishment
a
than the fact
hundred
that they
percent.
might get traded. I think it's remarkable.
I think another coach that was actually traded, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Sean Payton, I believe he was traded from the Saints to the Broncos. I know he took that year off, but
Yeah.
that situation that happened last night with him and Russell Wilson, and he kind of downplayed it in the post-game press conference as a coach should. He's not going to throw his player under the bus. But what did you make of that whole situation?
It's hard. It's in the heat of the moment. I was surprised that they didn't challenge those plays, to be honest, because the one looked pretty close to being a touchdown. And not that it would have happened, it would have changed anything as far as the outcome of the game, but that was their last hurrah, so to speak. And my guess is that on the play where there was the offside called, ironically, there were a couple today called as
Yeah.
well, offensive offside. My guess is, knowing what I know about Sean Payton and how, and I'm sure every head coach did it this week. I'm sure every head coach, in a team meeting, or certainly in the offensive meeting, put that shot from the game last week, the Kansas City Buffalo game, on the screen, and it ultimately would be the responsibility to the quarterback to make sure all the guys are onside. You're making sure they're lined up properly, and that would include, especially with the focus that we all believe, was the case after what happened in the KC game last week, to be such a point of emphasis by the coaches. So my guess is that was coached up really hard by Sean Payton, and Wilson just didn't, for whatever reason, missed it. Missed that his guard apparently was offsides. That's my and that's with no information.
Yeah.
That's just a hunch. Because it was such a critical point in the game, such a critical point in the game.
It's got to be so different for Russell Wilson to like after from what the rumors are that were out there the last few years, he was kind of coddled and told
Yeah.
yes to everything, and now he's really getting coached hard, and I think we're seeing the best come out of him because of that. But it's got to be a different mindset for that player, you know?
It is, but I don't know any great athlete that doesn't love to be coached hard. Because if the coach know or if the player knows that coach wants me to be the best that he believes I can be, and he is pushing me toward that. I don't care what level you're at, high school, college, anywhere, you want to be coached hard. You want to be pushed hard. And every coach is different. And you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. You don't know how Pete Carroll was on him, in the meeting rooms or the OCs out in Seattle. So it's hard to tell for sure what you don't see and you don't know. But Sean is a Bill Parcells disciple. And Bill, I mean, there's classic imagery of Bill and Phil Sims, going at it. But they both had the same agenda, whatever we got to do to win. And they weren't afraid of going at each other when they believed in their point and position. So I think I do think that any great athlete loves to be coached hard as long as the coaching comes from a point that is shared, and that is ultimately, striving for success, striving for victory. So I'm not surprised.
No, and like I said, I think we're seeing a much better Russell Wilson
Yeah.
since that change.
Right.
And I mean, he's obviously had some great moments in the NFL. Yeah. So we are going to hit one more break, Bill, and then I think we come back and we talk a little college football. That's my sure. wheelhouse. We talk a little transfer portal. I know you have some very strong thoughts about what's been going on in college football and the transfer portal. So we'll come back, talk about that, and wrap everything up for the night. And you are listening to Gridiron Wrap right here on 760 WJR. We are back here on the Gridiron Wrap for the last segment of the night. And we're going to talk a little transfer portal. Bill, I know you have strong thoughts on everything that's going on in the NCAA with the transfer portal and the amount of players that are in there. I know on the first day alone, there was over 800 players that entered their name into that thing. It's crazy. It's free agency in college football. We've seen pros and cons to it. I mean, for a local angle, we saw Michigan State get the number one quarterback in the transfer portal coming from Oregon State. I'm very pro transfer portal personally. I know we've talked about it a little, but I'm always of the side of, I think kids should be able to go and do what they want to do just like coaches are able to. But I do also see the downside and the negatives to it. So what are your thoughts on the whole thing?
Well, I think ultimately, you know, water always finds the level. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, all sports, but the NCAA football in particular has gone through a lot of peaks and valleys over the years. I mean, when I was in high school, there was no limit on scholarships. And I remember when teams like Pitt that won a national title in 76, they were offering 150 scholarships a year. They were grabbing every player they could with the logic being, you know, the more we have, the more we might find. And even in the NFL, there never used to be a limit on how many players you could take to training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And when I worked with Washington, I think we took more players to training camp than any team in the league. A lot of free agents. And we found a couple that ended up playing and contributing. But with respect to college, I mean, you've always had sort of a form of this. I mean, and it was probably more egregious when kids were coming out of the high school, when teams were essentially bidding for their services and doing whatever they could to get a kid. I remember a story about a great college basketball player. He was the number one high school player in the country. And the school that got him legally and legitimately got him a summer job. Well, the summer job was working for an insurance company, one of the corporate headquarters in the city in which the school was located. And they gave him accounts to underwrite, and the commission was like $60,000, you know? So was anything violated? I don't think so. So, you know, crazy things happen over the years. But the thing that I wonder, and I would not be surprised, and that is that there ultimately would be a salary cap of some sorts. Because if you lose the image of a level playing field, of it being equal,
yeah,
then you're in trouble. You're in trouble. That's what we have to protect.
I agree. I think it's a more of a when, not if. I think it's inevitable for sure. But we'll see. I mean, it's not going to slow down, that's for sure. And, you know, Congress is going to get their hands in it and probably mess it up even more. So college football is definitely in a weird place, but I'll always love the sport. And I think we're going to see it change a lot over the next few years. So we won't be here next week, Bill, because there's an MSU game.
Yes,
so the
is.
Next time we talk, we might be talking about the Lions division winner. And you are listening to the Gridiron Wrap right here on 760 WJR.